Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer.
Only in America.
Randy Tobler.
Dreaming in red, white, and blue.
On News Talk STL.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Randy Tobler Show. Hearing a little bit of echo here, Jerome, so there may be something we can do on adjusting the sound there. I'm hearing myself in my ears, so we can probably adjust that a little bit. Welcome to the program. Last night, Tim Johnson joins Vivek Ramaswamy in endorsing Donald Trump. Is it an inevitability? Probably so. What does the continued presence of DeSantis and Nikki Haley mean in the race to the GOP nomination? And what does it all mean for the general election? It looks like the battle is drawn, battle lines are drawn, and battle is on. We have a big show today. Both state politics as well as the national scene are on my mind. I imagine they're on yours, too, as things coalesce among most Republicans, if not all. We'll be checking in with Senator Bill Igel at 7:25. There was a big throwdown in Jefferson City with he and Cindy O'Loughlin yesterday. Of course, Bill's a gubernatorial candidate and part of the Freedom Caucus. And Cindy O'Loughlin is the Senate Majority Leader. So lots going on in Jefferson City. We'll unpack that a little bit, see how things are going with Bill. And I know he's on the trail of taking Biden off of the menu here in Missouri on the Democrat side. We'll see if that happens. And I know Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft is waiting for the Supreme Court judgment to see whether or not he will have the authority to do that. Virginia Cruda at 7:45. Andrew Art Arthur joins us from the Center for Immigration Studies at 8:06. Why? Because suddenly things have gotten a little quieter at the border. Just at the same time that Joe Biden is taking out missile installations in Yemen, launching kinetic action in the Red Sea and in Yemen. Remember that movie Wag the Dog? Suddenly things get quieter on the border? Are we manipulating things to our own political advantage in this election season? Nah, couldn't be that Joe and his handlers are doing that. We'll talk with Art Arthur about what's going on at the border. And he wrote a great blog and actually a couple other pieces that we want to cover concerning this Border Patrol numbers for who's coming across and who isn't. Those have been delayed in release. We wonder what that's all about. Tim Jones, of course, you hear him on the Jones and Arp show every afternoon on News Talk STL. He'll be with us because I've got to find out what's going on in his head about the national scene, the Jeff City scene, congressional gridlock up nationally on the border, on spending and aid. What does it mean? We'll have to see. And, of course, your calls all morning, 314-912-1019. Laura Ingraham had an interesting monologue last night, and I think I don't disagree. It was a good day yesterday and a good week as you saw things slow down at the border for whatever reason. If that's because the Biden administration is being shamed into realizing that if they want to have any chance of a snowball in Hades of winning this election, they better tighten things at the border. Is that what the response is? Suddenly people are remaining in Mexico. Wow. After 3 years, it's about time he gets on it. And at the same time, the March for Life yesterday in D.C. was great to see. What a fantastic effort as thousands came out in snow. I wouldn't call it a blizzard, but snow. Speaker Mike Johnson made a revelation and a moving testimony that I think speaks to the power of the pro-life movement. We should call it the anti-abortion movement. Yes, we're pro-life, but I mean, more than that, we're anti-abortion because they are pro-abortion, and we should be clear about that. They're not pro-choice. They're pro-abortion all the way up to, and in some cases, including infanticide. What the heck's that all about? It's crazy. Just crazy. So let's drill down on this short-term funding bill that was spawned on us yesterday. It funds the government through March. Several essential services were threatened at being closed and not funded. And we have to ask ourselves the question, how long are these congressional leaders on the Republican side going to allow this travesty to go on? At the same time, we have to ask the question, they are our representative leaders. And I keep having to remind people of that. that if they are getting elected and reelected, is it because they've avoided a government shutdown? We saw how in the past, government shutdowns have not been politically expedient for the Republican side because of the complicit media on the progressive side that believes that more government is better government. And so are we the people, and I don't mean you and the person next to you listening to the program and the person who you talk to at work about government spendthrift and loose borders and on and on and on. I mean, that's not, you're for a government shutdown. Let it happen. That's what needs to happen. Hold these people accountable for their profligate spending. I'm talking about those persuadable, perhaps, people in the middle that are going to make the difference when it comes to every election, not in the primary. The primary is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the general. How in the world can we expect to win general elections on the conservative side of the fence when over 50% of Americans are in one way or another getting subsidies from the government? Healthcare, education, sustainable energy, so-called sustainable energy, government workers. There's no bluer place on the planet than Washington, D.C. and the surrounding counties. So are our representatives, and I include those in purple districts. We have to remember there are the Paul Ryan districts. That's a reality in America. We, the people, are responsible for electing representatives who will be fiscally responsible, aren't we? Why do we keep blaming it on them when we're the ones? And again, when I say we, I mean we, the people. That includes liberal people. That includes progressive people. That includes people that think that the government should take care of every problem, supply every need, forgive every debt. That's the problem. There wouldn't be any debate about whether we need to kick the can down the road on the continuing resolutions. Do you know in the last four decades, we've only passed, our representatives have only passed a budget on time for the fiscal year starting on October 1st, only four times in the last four decades. And the last time was 1996, I believe. So when people bellyache about that, I ask them, what have you done to try to persuade your persuadable neighbor, colleague, family member that this is unacceptable? It doesn't work in the business that they work in, does it? There's a budget that is planned and executed. Not, well, let's just buy what we want. Let's just forgive what debt we want. Let's just get into too much funding for soft foreign entanglements instead of getting the job done and getting the heck out in a Schwarzkopf kind of a way. And so we need to start arguing and debating and inspiring among ourselves. And then our representatives will represent that collective and proper notion of how a government should run. Every time I hear people say and throw Mitch McConnell out, I mean, I'm sorry. Mitch McConnell's one guy. Every time I hear, throw Kevin McCarthy out, throw Speaker Johnson out. And for all of you folks, and we're going to talk, I mean, look, I may be a little bit at odds with the Bill Eagles, and I know Jim and I have had conversations. Bob and I have had conversations. I don't disagree with what the Freedom Caucus, what Matt Gaetz, what Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't disagree. Rand Paul. Oh, I wish Rand Paul was running for president again and was in the Oval. Of course, he's not, because there are not enough people in this country that abide by the traditional principles. So we have a lot of work to do at the Rotary Club, at the diner, at a cocktail party. We have a lot of work to do. And I don't mean a cocktail party with your friends who are, you know, pachyderms. That's not what I'm talking about. The work to be done is to align people's values with those of the most fervent, most zealous traditional conservatives. We just don't have enough people on the field or on the bench to get those things done. So I'm loath to criticize so-called moderates. They are representing purpler districts, aren't they? And we're going to press Bill on that. I mean, I agree. We need to abolish property taxes tomorrow. We need to throw Joe Biden off the slate tomorrow. But the problem is we don't have enough popular opinion in Missouri, for instance. Those of you who are, you know, listening from the metropolitan area, the St. Louis metropolitan area, you don't realize that your voices are drowned out by hundreds of thousands and more of voters who pull the ballot for those who will plunder your wealth and income for the benefit of others and for their own harvesting of votes. It's that simple. They have representatives too. Jerome's over there. Jerome's saying, hey, tone it down. Be quiet. Don't drink too much coffee, Randy. You're going to have a stroke. But look, I mean, this is true. How you doing, Jerome? Everything going good this morning?
Yeah, I think the gremlins are back in our office. But besides that, I think everything's going all good.
Good. It's good to hear your voice. I know we were having a little tech problem at first. But look, we need to be careful about the infighting in our own ranks and recognize that there are people in districts that are not pure-blooded, hard-right, traditional founding father conservatives. And they, the representatives who wear the Republican brand have to represent their district. If they don't, they'll be a Democrat who panders to enough Republicans but is predominantly Democrat that will get elected in the next cycle. Tell me where I'm wrong. 314-912-1019. Let's have a conversation. Can we coalesce? Can we get along? Can we realize that we are at a center-right point in our country? We still are. And we need to get to a right-right point in our country. How do we do that without shooting ourselves in the feet, having a circular firing squad, and blowing the whole thing up and giving it all to a one-party system led by Democrats that becomes the United Socialist States of America, the USSA? 314-912-1019. When we come back, Michelle Obama, watch her. I've got a story, and we've got some sound. And you should be scared. Be very worried if you're Donald Trump. That coming up. We'll be back.
Randy Tobler, truth warrior, woke destroyer, on News Talk STL.
Welcome back to the program. If you'd like to join in on the program, the number is 314-912-1019 here on News Talk STL at 1019 and 94.1. This is definitely a decision year of high, high priority and importance. And I don't think that our candidates are as lock solid as we think they are. Here's a piece from the New York Post by Cindy Adams. But let me set this up with a little sound from Michelle Obama. You heard a little clip of this maybe a week or two ago. Hear this. Oh, well, we don't have it. We don't have it. Don't have it. Okay, well, we'll have it soon. But remember when Michelle Obama was talking to, she was, I don't know, there's some guy who is a like a guru, like a self, you know, a self care, well, health and wellness guru, psychological guy, self-help guy. And she was talking about how she was so afraid and she's just terrified Trump will win. And then this story by Cindy Adams hit the press the other day. You know, you got Biden, who's more and more holed up. We saw Kamala now running with the campaign water. And it's as though all of the surrogates are running for Joe. Are they setting up just him fading into the sunset, sipping on his chocolate chip shakes, and then out comes Michelle Obama? I've been speculating this for over a year. Cindy Adams reports in the New York Post that over a year ago, in the summer of 2022, that's a year and a half ago, she was in New York City meeting several big hedge fund CEOs saying, quote, I am running and I am asking for your support, close quote. Now that's a report in the New York Post. You hear the Obamas are nudging and basically by encouraging Joe and his campaign to be more aggressive. Is that a veiled way of saying, Joe, give it up? It's over. Newsom, of course, is not going to, that's not going to make it. They've got a $75 billion deficit. Christie, forget about him. Of course, Nikki is soon to be out. Even if she comes close in New Hampshire, she's in trouble. It's reported the polls are indicating in South Carolina. DeSantis, I think it's over. And so it'll be definitely Trump, which I think raises the stakes of a massive monumental loss for Joe Biden, which raises the likelihood that earlier and more decisively, he's going to have to bow out. You don't know where it's going to go, but I just think that when we've got now a reporter saying that she was out there sort of, you know, cajoling some supporters, and you hear the way they're talking about Joe's campaign and how it's just really fumbling. I don't know. I just think that she's unbeatable. And I think Donald Trump, I don't think Trump can beat Michelle Obama. I don't think it happens. What do you think? Jerome, what do you think? Think it's over? If Michelle Obama, with now the second man being the former two-term president, being, you know, the second man, you think there's any chance Trump wins?
I don't know. Michelle Obama looks pretty strong. Not maybe as a candidate, but as a person, you know, I'd be a little worried about having to face up against her.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's one of the most popular women in America. I mean, dare I say, more popular than our own Katie, who's very popular.
Oh, yeah. Katie is very popular. That's true.
Very popular.
Maybe she should put her hat in the ring.
Ah, boy. If Katie, I there it is. Katie for VP.
There we go.
She hits it on all eight cylinders. Mom, professional.
Check.
Conservative.
Check.
Multi-talented. She's a singer, you know, a band performer. Absolutely. Attractive. I mean, she hits it on all. She's an attractive candidate in all of the ways. Next time I'm on with Katie and Tony, I'm going to have to ask her if she has an interest. I could start lobbying for her.
Oh, absolutely. I think that'd be a great campaign. I mean, I don't think at this point anybody could really do a worse job than Harris, to be honest. So,
yeah. I think Katie would be a dynamite. She would be a dynamite candidate. Wow. I'd have to see if she'd be interested in it. I don't know. Of course, I don't know. I don't know. She's such a good mama, though. I mean, you know, that would take her off of the mama trail. So I don't know how she'd be able to do all that. She's talented, but how could she run for vice president? And we wouldn't have her on the air here anymore. Let me reel that back in. I don't know what I want more. I don't know. And what would we do without Katie's technical expertise here in the station? I just think that the vice presidential pick on Trump's side is pivotal, as is the determination of who he's really going to be running against. I don't think he's going to be running against Biden. I really don't think so. It's going to be someone else. I don't think it's Newsom. Could Christie run as an independent? He said he's going to do anything he can to prevent Donald Trump from having a second term. The dynamics here are fascinating, just unbelievable. And then, you know, you throw in the wild card of who's going to be. I don't think it'd be Newsom. But, I mean, RFK, he's polling at what, mid-teens in many of these polls? That's sort of in Ross Perot land. And remember, Ross Perot, I believe, took away a second term from George H.W. Bush. I think it's pretty clear that more votes went from him to Perot than they did from Bill Clinton. So, man, wouldn't that be something? And is there any hope that Donald Trump can solidify some of the voters and not repel them with some of his bombastic rhetorical flaws? People had voted for him in the 2016 election, but then were really like, I don't know, this guy, I can't deal with it. You know, the suburban mom thing in 2020, they abandoned him. On the other hand, he's gaining ground when it comes with minorities. African-Americans are really at a fevered pitch in terms of switching from the Democrats, who have taken Black Americans way too for granted for way too long. I just think it's fascinating. This is just amazing. We'll have to see where it goes. And then we've got the whole issue of the quagmires in foreign policy. And will Joe Biden or whoever's running his campaign and his administration, it's clearly not Joe at this time. It's not Joe. He's the Manchurian candidate. He's out of touch. Increasingly, he's walking around looking like, well, which way did he go? Which way did he go? I mean, he has no idea where he's at. He can't speak a cogent sentence. And he even struggles reading off the teleprompter anymore. But will people who are pulling the strings and want to stay in power, because, of course, power is one of the, and, well, the ambition to power is one of the deadliest vices that exist in the human existence, in the human being. Will those people encourage more warmongering and more stirring up and fomenting of foreign entanglement? Because a wartime president is always a popular president. Let's just face it. People aren't going to abandon a president who's fighting a war, because if you abandon the president, you're indirectly abandoning support for the military, for the service members whose boots are on the ground, whose uniforms are, you know, in the cockpit, pulling on the yoke, at the helm of the ship. Okay, I've covered the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, you know. I haven't covered the Marines. But you know what I mean. And that's the old movie. Do you ever see that movie, Wag the Dog, Jerome?
No, I haven't. What's it about?
It's a great movie. I think it, help me here, guys. I think it came out in the late 90s. But it was about a candidate basically starting a war to garner political favor among the electorate in an election season. I mean, it's funny. The other day, Joe Biden announced another dollop of debt forgiveness. So that's a handout for votes. It's preposterous. It's absurd. It's obscene. But that's what the Democrats do. Preposterous, absurd, and obscene. And devious and manipulative. What else can I come up with? What other kind of, you know, adjectives? But that's the way they act. Well, actually, they're adverbs. Adverbs. So first, it's going to be giving money to young people through more debt forgiveness. They continue to lay money on heavy donors and the people employed in the, quote, sustainable industry and energy industry. There'll probably be some healthcare handout coming along. I anticipate that. What else can we do? What else can he do? Oh, now suddenly the borders are tightening up. We're going to talk with Art Arthur about that at 8:06. I want to talk with him because this is just sinister. Suddenly, the border crossing numbers have come down to a much lower number. They're almost a trickle compared to, you know, the maximum of, what, 10,000 a day back in a month ago or so.
Yeah, that was absolutely ridiculous. You said they're finally doing something about it after Lord knows how many people have come here already. Like, and now that
they went down and had a meeting in Mexico, and somehow now Mexico is suddenly putting a cork in the bottle so that they're not escaping Mexico to our. Isn't that interesting? Why now? Well, what's changed? You know what's changed? It's an election season.
Oh, absolutely.
We're not that stupid. Apparently, enough American voters are in either focus groups or some kind of internal polling. That's why they do these things. They don't do these moves without clearly strategizing what particular voting target they're going to impact with a particular policy move, or ignorance of enforcement, which they've ignored for over 2.5 years. Well, 3 years.
Yeah, and the amount
we're
of
coming
people
up here on one of the most tragic days in American history, the anniversary of one of the most tragic days in American history. You know what that was, Jerome?
Lay it on me.
Is that tomorrow or is it today? The inauguration of President Joe Biden.
Boo.
I think that's tomorrow. Yeah. It is one of the most fateful days. I mean, it, you know, don't you think so? I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm not happy with Biden.
Don't you think so? I mean, I think this guy has been a disaster, and yet they claim that it's been good for us, and we just aren't understanding it.
We don't know what's good for us. That's what they think of us.
Yeah.
And the amount of people out there that look at what he's doing and what he's like, all the promises that he's just now following up on, and they still think, oh, this is good. All these people coming here from Honduras through Mexico, some of the people from Mexico themselves coming here and just really laying a lot of infrastructural stress on us, that's good in their eyes. And yeah, that's what worries me.
I think what they're doing, you're right. So they let the people come in. 60% or more of the guys coming in are single adult males. These are not families that are destitute and are under persecution. These are not women running from rape. These are guys looking for work in America. And they're doing it in all the wrong ways. And of course, they come from cultures and from countries that are totally dependent on a socialist style government. So that's their mindset. And then they come in and they get free lodging, free food, free cell phones, free healthcare. You saw where they're overwhelming a hospital in Denver, absolutely overwhelming. And American citizens are being turned away. I'm surprised there haven't been just skirmishes that you can't imagine between American citizens and these illegals who are taking away the access to health care. And to make it worse, Okay, so you're having a heart attack, or you're having a baby, or you've got a broken bone, or you've dislocated your shoulder, or you've got a hot appendix, and you're knocking on the door of the emergency room, and Consuela and Pedro are there, you know, getting care, and you can't get in, and you're paying their bill. Boy, it doesn't get much better for that than that, right? Wow, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Hey, real quick, before we get you worked up again, we do have a caller that wants to share some thoughts with you, if you have time.
Yeah, let's do it.
Noise.
Who's online?
And they went dead.
We have Rick with us right now. Sounds like he's got something going on in the background, but Rick would like to share some thoughts with you. He specifically said,
Rick, go ahead. What's up, Rick?
All right. I can hear you now. It kind of went dead kind of for a moment, Tito, but I can hear you.
Oh, Rick.
You can hear me.
How you doing, Rick?
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe okay, as long as maybe I am still getting older.
Well, Rick, did you get your well working? You shared with me on the text line that your well froze up. You got that working again, so you have fresh water?
Oh, I'm well now, thankfully, to have some water. Boy, that makes a big difference when you got water, if you can figure that one, too. Yeah, it's a great deal. I never thought I was that spoiled until I lost water.
But, that's tough.
Yeah,
that's tough.
I can turn the faucet on, and there it is, and that, and get in the shower. Which, if we don't appreciate taking a shower, somebody else will. So that we do it.
Well said from a guy that spent time overseas in the military environments. Yes.
Well, at least back here in that, I don't have snow get shoved up between my toes when hiking to the shower room, so that's a little bit better, too. Yep, with the old life in the Himalayas. And, but I thought I heard somebody saying something politically correct on a show, and I thought I'd ask, because I've been in Africa some, and heard somebody say African-American, and they didn't say if they were talking about a white African or a black African or one of the in-betweens on that, because they got all the above over there in Africa. And I've actually met a couple that were actual African-Americans, and a couple of them were white African-Americans, because, you know, when somebody's born in Africa and comes to America, then they figure they are African-American, at least. But there is some folks that will say that if somebody happens to be, like, black, and they're automatically called African-American, and that offends at least some of my black buddies. They were offended if you'd call them something like that, because they quickly tell you, no, it ain't African, it's just American. And especially if they were ever in Africa, they learn real quick that they have about almost nothing in common other than maybe a complexion. If they're in the middle, the belly of Africa is mainly where the black Africans are mainly at, though they are in the other parts too.
Most black Americans, African-American Americans that I know, don't really take offense no matter what you use. Now, the next time I have Chris Arps on, I have to talk with Chris. I don't think I've ever asked him that question, because, see, it would make a difference to me. If Chris had a real beef with one or the other, then I would probably respect, I would respect that, because Chris is a dear friend and a great conservative, and so I would, but I think I've used both terms with Chris, and I don't think Chris really, it's not about that with Chris, it's about the policies. I don't know, but that's something I'll have to talk with him about.
But mine are mostly military, you know, since that's where I know a lot of the black folks from, through the military. And just like white folks, you can have good, bad, or otherwise, whatever. And that they're folks just like us. And as far as the Himalayas, I wouldn't mind getting back there again, but that ain't going to happen. Our government, our current government, screwed that up too bad.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Well, hey, I got to run, Rick. It's good to talk with you. You stay safe there in Martha'sville. Keep your well thawed out, and keep your pipes nice and wet, not frozen. Thanks, Rick. Appreciate the call.
And have a good run.
Hey, you too. There he is. Oh, Rick. All right. Yeah, he was a civilian contractor over in, over in the Afghani effort over there. So, all right, when we come back, we're gonna play some sound that I think is quite moving from the March for Life yesterday, when Speaker Johnson made one of the most moving little 15-second testimonies, but it was powerful. That and more coming up. And at the 7 o'clock hour, of course, we talk with Senator Bill Eigel. We hope to, anyway. We're trying to arrange things on that as we speak. And more time for you to weigh in on the program. Who's Trump's VP? Unless you think it's DeSantis or Haley, still have a chance. And who will he be running against? Those are the two questions on the table here on the Tolbert Show this morning. 314-912-1019 on 1019 94.1 News Talk STL. Be right back.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer on News Watch Talk us on our live STL stream. Using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. Drive by T-Mac on the radio.
Welcome back to the program. 6:47. Bill Eigel joins us at 7:25. Tim Jones at 8:05. I'm sorry, Art Arthur at 8:05. Tim Jones at 8:25. So we got a packed last half of the show. That's why it's time for you to get in now. I love when you're my guest here at the Liberty Airlayer. So come on in. Jerome will let you in the door, pour you a cup of coffee. What are you serving this morning, Jerome? You got some nice, like, Black Rifle coffee, or what are we using this morning?
Yeah, a friend of mine gave me a little bit of, it's called Death Wish, and it's actually one of the strongest coffees you can legally buy. So I was hoping that would kind of help us out a little bit. But I'd also like to know what Gene, our caller right now, is drinking as well. How you doing, Gene?
Good morning, you guys. Hey, you got to try Jerome Black Rifle Murdered Out. That's their real potent, robust coffee. That's the fave in our house.
Yeah. You know, my son-in-law and daughter are out in North Carolina at Fort Bragg, now called Fort Liberty. He's finishing up his Green Beret training. And we hope to see him graduate here in February. I'll probably may have to miss you guys for a Saturday because we'll see how that works out. I may or may not be able to make that because there's a big graduation ceremony. But man, they are Black Rifle. They're addicted to Black Rifle. It's good stuff.
It is. It's not cheap, but boy, I tell you, it is fantastic stuff. And pass on congratulations, prayers, and well wishes for both of them.
Yeah. So tell me, what are your thoughts about a VP running mate for what appears to be the inevitable candidacy of Donald J. Trump in this election cycle?
Well, if I can, could I take a quick moment and back up a couple of pieces of a segment?
Sure.
Dan Bongino, a couple of days ago, and I don't know if you're aware of this, he actually served in the Secret Service on White House detail while Obama's were in.
I know.
And... Sure. He stated on his show that he honestly doesn't think Michelle's going to run because he said, knowing her the way he does, she's a very private person and actually doesn't like getting around crowds and stuff. Now, on the other hand, I think they're both a bunch of strong enough megalomaniacs that, yep, they'd go. And if she went in, it would be the Black woman vote. Oh yeah, that's it. Boom, vote for that without. And then we're going to end up with term four of Obama because I still think he's got a lot to do with what's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Joe's out of touch.
He is. And VP pick, he's actually got, I think, a number of really good choices. I don't know who I'd think for his number one. Kristi Noem, Tim Scott's real good, J.D. Vance. There, we've got a pretty deep seat.
How about, so you got Tim Scott came out and endorsed Trump yesterday. Vivek has already endorsed him. But I've heard there's been a lot of talk about Elise Stefanik. And that the Democrats have, one of the Democrats proposed a censure resolution for her. Because I think they want to try to wound her. I think they might be frightened of Elise Stefanik. She's sharp.
She is. That would not surprise me whatsoever. I mean, whoever he picks, you know they're going to be cutting loose with the entire firing squad. destroy whoever he picks. That's just the way they work. That's what can happen.
Now, in terms of vice presidential attractiveness as a candidate, all the way, physically, policy wise, everything. Jerome shared with me on the text just now that he thinks that Kristi Noem looks pretty good in a plumber's outfit. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, she does. You have to admit she is quite an attractive woman. That's for sure. But the other women, there's nothing wrong with the look of a good conservative woman.
No, you know, I've said it before. Women, conservative women, on balance, are much more attractive than liberal women. I don't know why that is, but it's true. It's objectively true. It's Jerome, true. Will you confirm?
Oh, absolutely, it's true.
Oh, Gene, I think will you so confirm? Too. That goes. Oh, yeah, that goes all the way back to Maharishi days and everything, when he used to talk about the nag woman. That's how he used to refer to National Organization of Women when they were on their high horse.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I think it has to do with personal accomplishment and rugged independence that really defines conservatism, that achievement is a fulfilling... Achievement and service are fulfilling values in their own and goals and ambitions. And every conservative woman I know is active, achieving, wanting to improve the life of her family and others. And I think, but on their own dime, not on other people's dime, they want to earn it, and it shares the values that their men share. And I think there's something about that that leads to a demeanor and to a presence that's just different than the, oh, I'm a victim, take care of me, woe is me.
Well, I think that's true. And across the board, I think people on the left generally are angry, unhappy, always griping about something. And you look on the conservative side, and you can tell by the way you act, they act in public demonstration situations and everything. Conservatives are just a happier group of people.
Yeah. Okay, but Gene, before I let you go, I do have to ask you. I'm gonna sort of push you on this now. If you had to make a choice tomorrow and make a recommendation to the Trump campaign, because I know that they're listening to you, who would you pick? Who needs to be his VP candidate? Because, you know, he's going to be wounded. He's going to be wounded when these trials come out, if they come out before the election. There will be things said in testimony that are going to be wounding, especially to the independent voters. So people will be looking very strongly at this VP pick, because that could mean the difference between zero or 12 years of conservative traditional governance. So who would you recommend for VP?
Let's see. I'd have to roll just without getting into all sorts of things. Kristi Noem.
Okay. Kristi Noem. Gene says Kristi Noem. And I think that you couldn't come up with a better choice than her, although any of the people that are on the short list would certainly be very, very good. I think Elise
would be fantastic. Got a great bench, but I really think it's going to end up being a woman. I mean, you could throw Ben Carson in there, too. We just got a tremendous bench of people that would be well-serving.
You're right.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, thanks, Gene. Good talking to you, brother. Stay warm.
Thanks. God bless. You, too.
All right. Same to you. Do we have time for that Mike Johnson sound, Jerome?
Yeah, let me go ahead and pull that up real quick.
So Mike Johnson spoke at the March for Life in D.C. the other day, and it was snowing. I mean, thousands and thousands of people came out there to support the unborn, and it was heartwarming, and it was such a positive expression in such a negative climate in our country. Here's what Mike Johnson had to say.
I am myself a product of an unplanned pregnancy. In January of 1972, exactly 1 year before Roe v. Wade, my parents, who were just teenagers at the time, chose life. And I am very profoundly grateful that they did.
Powerful, riveting witness for making the right decision and encouraging the right decision. You know, I haven't had a chance to do the research on this, but I'm going to. Jerome, you and I can work on this here today or over the week if we can't find it today. I don't know that Mike Johnson's come out and talked about the circumstances surrounding his parents' pregnancy, but I would surmise and I would speculate that the parents of each of those teens who ultimately became his parents we're probably very supportive rather than stigmatizing and rejecting and, oh, go get an abortion. Remember, this happened a year before Roe became law. And I'm wondering if he's ever talked about that in a deeper way and unpacked it. We'll look and see. Anyway, kudos to Speaker Mike Johnson, and kudos to him for holding his ground on the whole immigration thing. When we come back, though, we're going to switch gears to Davos. Some powerful testimony there. Stay there.